John Busby with the Culture Buzz, and I am excited to introduce a new author to the Culture Buzz, but he is an experienced and seasoned go-beyond author. He's an experienced and seasoned creative because he does so much. Gary Grossman is my guest. His latest offering to you folks is a wonderful thriller. It's called Executive Force. In fact, I love the term thriller because he is part of an incredible cadre of writers called the International Thriller Writers. And you know those folks, because we have had many of these authors on the show multiple times. Count it down. MJ Rose, Steve Barry, Douglas Preston, Brad Meltzer, Mike Bond, and now we have Gary Grossman. And of course, how can I forget the very Iowa-connected David Morrell? It's been fun to visit with David over the years. But I'm looking forward to beginning a dialogue that will be ongoing, I hope, with Gary Grossman, because he is right up there with those other writers. And you are going to love his latest offering. It's a standalone book, Executive Force. It's kind of a part of I don't want to call it series, because each book stands alone, Gary, as we know. By the way, folks, great website. Connect with him, GaryGrossman.com. And of course, you can connect with his books there. If you're just meeting Gary for the first time, wonderful luck. You have several books you can pick up, because I've found over the years that authors take longer to write a book than us readers take to read a book. So unfortunately, that's the way it works. Gary, welcome to the Culture Buzz. So excited to talk about Executive Force, because you have found something that you've been able to loop in so many aspects of your diverse career into this series of executive books, and Executive Force is just another sterling example.
John, thank you so much. What a great introduction, and to be included in the likes of Steve Barry and Brad Meltzer and David Morrell, wonderful, wonderful mentors of mine, and Steve Barry has given me great quotes over the years from my books, as has Brad. And I am in rarefied company, so thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Well, you've earned that very simply because, folks, once you dive into this book, kind of set time aside, because you're going to find it so hard to put down the book. Gary, no surprise, as you start listening to the conversation, writes in a form that I like to say, I wish your books were in Braille, and I wish I could read Braille, because I see myself closing my eyes and visualizing the action, the situations, the presence that you create in your books, Gary.
Wow. Well, I try to write cinematically, and I'm a big fan of, not surprisingly, I think, spy movies, but and as much as I love James Bond, the great heroes that we have from that realm, that's not really how real life spycraft goes on. And that's really not what happens with uncovering international plots and avoiding war. What it really takes is a village of people. It takes somebody perhaps in the Department of Defense who was smart enough to talk to somebody in the FBI, who's smart enough to talk to somebody in the Secret Service, who's smart enough to talk to somebody in NATO, and sharing information. And when I approach a book that way, as I do in Executive Force and I have in the others, suddenly you're writing cinematically, because you're popping all around the world at different times, at different places. And it really comes down to the sharing of information rather than a James Bond or a Superman swooping in and solving the day. It takes old-fashioned, well, really gumshoe work. It takes detective work. And the world is so complicated today, and if we think that we can solve something in just one conversation and make the world better, it's not true, because everybody internationally has their own perspectives, has their own needs, wants, desires, their view of the world. And Executive Force deals with just that. It deals with a long incubating plot that involves North Korea and the supreme leader fictionalized in Executive Force, and a plot that was really incubated at a private school in Switzerland years ago when the character was in high school, meets a person who becomes a friend there, and flash forward to today, what are they doing? They're executing a plot and a plan that they developed in high school. That affects the stability of the United States of America. So uncovering a plot really has to start with, what is the motive? What is the reason? And what are the little pieces that come together? And with, again, executive force, it starts with somebody looking at assassinations of political leaders in the United States at a local level, not just a national level, but a local level, that makes at least principal people involved in the book, Secret Service agent Scott Rourke and a Supreme Court attorney, not a Supreme Court justice, but an attorney who works for the Supreme Court, Katie Kessler, makes them start putting the pieces together, realizing that somebody is trying to destabilize the political system and make people not want to run for office, not want to serve in government. And then at the same time, there's a separatist, secessionist movement going on, and they put those pieces together. Does A have anything to do with B? Does B have anything to do with A? If so, who's behind it? So there's a lot going on. And to get back to your question, it's all about that imagery.
Yes.
And jumping around the world.
Yes. Well, and I love the fact that, you know, we have that global, that bigger than an average Joe kind of action and events that are going on in your writing, but you have so many wonderful facets and layers to your key characters you just mentioned. Talk about how you develop those two, because, I mean, it's almost like I should be able to call one of them up and say, you know, I know you're really busy, but I'd love to sit down and have coffee with you for a little while.
Oh, I love that you say that, because you know what? That's how the characters develop. I'm smiling as I'm answering this, because that's how the characters develop. I may come up with a character, but they'll more often than not then tell me their story. It's like there's a knock at the door. I go to the door, talking, you know, literally, or not literally.
Metaphorical door.
Virtually, metaphorically. There's a knock at the door. They'll come in, say, Gary, move over. I'm going to take over on the story. It's like a Twilight Zone episode. And then they tell me these stories. So I always say, I don't write the novels. I don't write the books. The characters write the first draft. I come in and I work on the second draft. But they're all really interesting people. Even the bad guys become interesting.
Yes.
Because, like everybody else, they get up in the morning, they put on their shoes and socks, they figure out what they're going to do, they have relationships, they don't have relationships, they have a backstory that got them to where they are now, the motivation that gets them there, they'll eat and go to sleep. And when you realize that everybody needs to be a real person in a book. Again, that's the difference between, you know, what I try to write and some of the other books that I read, that I love to read, but you're watching a bigger-than-life person, a bigger-than-life character. I like to get into these characters being real people and having real relationships. And Scott Rourke, Secret Service agent, is ready to leave his job and to give it all up. And he's talking with a CIA operative who's his friend, and they're talking about starting a business together. Well, something happens that gets in the way of that plan, and that's in the middle of all this action. And Scott Rourke is engaged to Katie Kessler, and they meet in the first book in Executive Actions. Now they're in Executive Force, the fourth book, together. And he's worried about her, she's worried about him, and yet she's now taking as many chances as he is, and she infiltrates the separatist organization. And what happens? He's worried about her, real life. So as much as we can invest these characters with real life problems, I think it becomes very real for the reader.
Oh, it's such more, it's such a much greater experience for the reader as they delve into it, because it's true, you know, none of us is perfect, and some of those superheroes from decades ago used to be totally perfect, and it didn't make any sense, really, when you got into it. Gary Grossman is my guest. Executive Force is his latest offering to you. What a great thriller to dive into. What a perfect time of the year, because it's going to have a day that ends in Y. So you know that any time you pick up a Gary Grossman book, you're going to have a great, great experience reading it and just enjoying the world, the people that he has created. Go to GaryGrossman.com. That's his website. You can, of course, go on Amazon and directly connect with getting his books. Just look up Gary Grossman. More importantly, look up Executive Force. But I love what you've done, which is you didn't create something where one book is dependent on the other book. You have the repetition of characters, but each book is a standalone. So, folks, if you want to start with Executive Force, go right ahead and do so. Once you read that, you're going to want to pick up every one of Gary's books because it's great fun. Once you've created these kind of characters and you start creating these scenarios that are just so rich and complex, but they start tying things together, your mind must be racing. Do you have all these little baskets in your mind where you toss ideas for future stories?
Well, I start with an outline, and then I find, as I kind of mentioned before, the characters take over, which is really wonderful. And I find that there will be that knock in the door that I don't really know where it's going. But I do start with a premise. What is amazing to me, and maybe it's because the political world is kind of so crazy these days, and people will kind of ask, how do you come up with anything, and how do you come up with something that is going to be more fantastic to read than the daily news? Well, I find that once you start thinking the unthinkable, you really come up with, how can I describe it? You come up with the unknowable. And then what's possible or likely. That's how I approach my writing. I also have a strong sense of history. I'm a TV documentary producer. I've done so much research on history in my documentaries that part of it draws into all the books. But starting with Executive Actions deals with Russian sleeper cell spies. Russians who used to pose as Americans coming into the U.S. to infiltrate the U.S. Well, today, they don't have to pose as Americans. They can be Russians coming in, as we've seen with Maria Butana, yes. The Russian spy who virtually infiltrated parts of the American political system during the last campaign. So that's something, thinking the unthinkable becomes very plausible. The second book dealt with the power of hate radio. That was Executive Treason. And the power of hate radio is nothing new. The power of radio, power of influencing people. You go back to the 1930s with Father Coughlin on the radio, who was preaching hate for so much of his time on the air and against Franklin Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. The third book in the series, Executive Command, deals with an attack or the vulnerability of our most valuable and vulnerable natural resource, and that's water. Well, we know how important it is to protect the water supplies, but how easy it would be to scare the entire nation if you don't know whether or not the water, let alone coming out of your tap, but at a bottle or at a hospital or at a school, will kill you. So I get over now to Executive Force, and I start dealing with separatists. I'm dealing with North Korea. I'm dealing with very real and present dangers that we're facing today. And they all of them seem to be on the edge of reality. I call the books political reality thrillers, not just political thrillers, but political reality thrillers, yes. Simply because there's so much reality that goes into them, or things that end up becoming very real. My editor started saying, Gary, I'm really worried. Everything that you're writing seems to come true. And I hear that in the back of my head because I also don't want to write a handbook for terrorists.
Yes.
I can put plots out there, but I don't want a lot of how-to in it because, you know, that's not my... My job is not to do that. I'll put it that way.
Yes, that makes total sense. Gary Grossman is my guest. Executive Force is his latest offering to you. Make sure you get your copy. You can go to Amazon to get your copy, no problem there. Of course, you want to find out more about Gary, all the wonderful things he's been doing, go to GaryGrossman.com. And the thing I love about you, as you were describing this, a term popped into my head. Maybe it's a term you've used before. You create the stories that are what I would call, they contain fantastical plausibility. And yes, that gives us such a chance to let our minds run free, but still you're teetering on that. It's almost like when you're waking up, was that real or not?
Well, I grew up with in a family. My dad was in law enforcement. My mom was in politics. At a time when it was the Cold War, I had a shortwave radio, so I was listening to broadcasts from all over the world. I was very aware of a world beyond my small town in upstate New York along the Hudson River, population about 11,000 people. I knew the world was out there. I would listen to Radio Moscow. I would listen to broadcasts from Havana, Cuba. I would listen to the Vatican broadcasts and BBC and China and Switzerland and the Netherlands and all over. And I realized there was a world out there that made me start thinking about, I guess, where I belonged. I remember listening to, the first Russian satellite, Sputnik, on my shortwave radio, hearing that beep, 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 high-pitched. I'll spare the dogs that might be listening, and I won't do it very high-pitched over the interview now. And then going outside and seeing Sputnik fly over. I remember my dad being in New York City during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and my mother and I sitting alone at home wondering if I'll ever see him again. And I remember stocking what we thought might be a shelter, nuclear bomb shelter in our basement. Of course, it would have done no good. And I remember duck and cover exercises in school. All of those things gave me the foundation for, again, thinking, what if, what if, what if? And that phrase you came up with, fantastical plausibility, is absolutely dead on. Because if we don't think about what's possible, then we're not going to be prepared for it. And although I haven't done this yet, there are many thriller screenwriters, I think David Morrell is among them, and you can ask him next time he's on, and other thriller writers in film and television, who after 9/11 were invited to the Pentagon to advise military on plots that they're not thinking about.
Yes.
What do we need to think about, Hollywood writers and New York writers? What do we need to be worried about? Because they were asking people, Bruce Feirstein among them, who wrote three James Bond movies, what are we thinking about? What are we not thinking about that we have to be thinking about? And in my little world, which before I began writing thrillers was principally television producer, I had a meeting one day with the History Channel with my production company business partner. And I remember the day exactly. And I remember the conversation exactly. Somebody in the meeting, not me, said at the History Channel, "Do you think we're running out of history?" Well, I remember the date clearly, because that was September 10th, 2001.
Oh, my.
The day before the World Trade Center destruction, the day before the planes went down, the day before the Pentagon and the Pennsylvania crash. And the day before there, somebody was saying, do we think we'll ever run out of history? We will never run out of history. But it made me start thinking about plots that could be turned into novels that might help awaken our senses to the dangers that are out there. And that kind of goes right back to that shortwave radio listening as a kid and wondering about the Cold War and you know, how crimes are solved and how what's the intersect of politics and law enforcement, right back to my own parents.
Well, the more we diversify.
I love that phrase again, fantastical plausibility.
It's yours to use as you wish. you know, the more we open our eyes and are aware of the more, as much diversity and differences there are throughout the world. I mean, your vision, whether you knew it or not, listening on the shortwave radio as a young person, that's what we need to do. Keep your eyes open, folks. But at the same time, enjoy reading, because Executive Force is a masterful work. It is going to be one of those great thriller series. People are going to say Gary Grossman's thriller series right up there at the top. Go to GaryGrossman.com to find out more about this wonderful author. I'm going to do some virtual arm twisting and make sure that I get Gary back on this program, because I am so glad we finally connected. Your writing is exemplary, and it is masterful indulgence, and it's the kind of indulgence I love to get into. Keep up your creative mischief in all its wonderful forms, Gary, and I know we'll have you back here on the Culture Buzz. In the meantime, folks, go to Amazon, look up Executive Force by Gary Grossman, get your copy, and find out more about Gary on his website, GaryGrossman.com. Gary, thank you so much for your time. This has been a real treat for me.
Oh, thank you so much. I look forward to talking with you again. There will be another novel in March called Red Hotel, and that has its own unique origin story, so I'd love to be back. So
you will.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.